The year 1992. Lucy Borgia worked for a large nonprofit in Lima, Peru, a nonprofit that assisted people with HIV/AIDS. Walking to work one day, she noticed two young boys, probably no older than about 12, who were obviously living on the streets, grimy, well-worn, ill-fitting clothing, hair dirty and tangled. Well, striking up a conversation with them as she walked, she quickly learned that they were scared to be living on the rugged streets of Lima. When she reached her workplace, she told the boys that they should feel free to come there that night. They could sleep in her offices. And that they should feel free to extend her invitation to other boys. Now, since Lucy knew that she would be attending a family birthday party that night, she told the building custodian to unlock her agency's offices and let the boys come in if they showed up. Well, later that night after the party, Lucy decided to swing by the office building to check in on the boys. Had they shown up? Had the custodian balked at letting them in? Would she find them sitting on the curb in front of her building? No, they weren't on the curb. So she went in the building and headed down the hall to her suite of offices. And that's where she encountered a puzzle. The key unlocked the door into the offices, but try as she might, she could not shove it open. It felt like someone had lodged a rolled-up carpet behind the door to block the entry. Well, with the help of her sons, who were there with her, Lucy finally moved the door enough to create a space to squeeze through into the reception area of the offices. And as she blindly in the dark searched for the light switch, she tripped over that carpet roll. She caught her balance and she leaned her body against the wall, and holding her pose, her fingers continued to work the wall until they found the light switch. Click. She looked down at her feet and discovered several young kids curled up on the floor, asleep, their bodies jammed against the door. And then she began to look around the room, though it was hard to register at first what she was looking at, because every nook and cranny was covered with sleeping children. The reception area, her office, others' offices, the hallways, the break room. She said, I even found kids sleeping in the cupboards where we keep office supplies. Lucy counted more than 600 children in her offices, asleep that night. The word had passed like wildflower on the streets of Lima, found a shelter from the storm. Now, at that moment, Lucy did not know all the details that caused these boys and girls to run scared. Abuse, abandonment, child slavery. But she clearly sensed at that moment that her life would never be the same. She said, those children stacked one against another, asleep on the floor. They looked so defenseless, so vulnerable. They had no one to be their advocate, to defend their rights. I knew right then what path I had to take, she said. Now, making a personal stand against injustice usually demands making some painful choices, and Lucy did not have to wait long. She quickly found herself at one such crossroads. The kids of Lima kept coming back to the office building each night for sanctuary in her offices. And Lucy's staff at the HIV AIDS Center, eventually they could not tolerate this ongoing invasion. They collectively laid out an ultimatum to Lucy: it's either us or the kids. Oh, okay then. It's the kids. Don't you imagine that even now, 25 years later, that even now, among those boys and girls who survived living on the streets of that Peruvian city, don't you imagine that there are still many who remember and who give thanks for Miss Lucy, for giving them a shelter from the streets, for standing up to protect them and advocate for them and eventually to provide opportunity for them? Don't you imagine that there's still some that give thanks for her? I'm sure they do. I'm sure they thank God for her. I thank my God for you every time I think of you. That's how the Apostle Paul opened his letter when he wrote to the Christian church in Philippi, Greece. In biblical times, it wasn't unusual to begin letters with a word of thanksgiving. But I love the powerful sentiment of that simple line: I thank my God for you every time I think of you. Thanksgiving holiday serves to remind us of reasons to be grateful. We can be grateful for things like housing and freedom and food. We can be thankful for people like family, friends, neighbors. But we forget that while we may be mentally assembling a list of things to be thankful for, assembling a list of people to be thankful for, at that same time, right now, there are people thankful for you. You inspired someone. You supported someone. You rescued someone. You protected someone. You befriended someone. And because of you, others are filled with joy and gratitude and appreciation. Now, you might know that already. You may know of some folks who feel indebted to you, who are grateful for what you've been to them, what you've done for them. You may know some of these folks. But I'm sure there are others that you have no idea about who are thankful for you. When I was right out of seminary, I was an associate pastor at a large church in Michigan, and there much of my work was with junior high and senior high youth. Now, while many kids flock to church youth activities, some are reluctant. Social awkwardness, peer pressure about what is and isn't cool, parents reluctant to tell their children what to do, busy, busy kids. Lots of reasons why kids might not participate. And so working with kids, working with youth, requires constant invitation, constant encouragement. About 15 years ago, I received a note from a man who had been one of those reluctant youth at that church. Here it is. Jim remembered how I kept encouraging him to go on mission trips, to go to church summer camp, to come to Sunday night youth group, to play his trumpet in worship. And he remembered that he did all those things, but infrequently, and only after a lot of prodding. Now he's the director of music at that church. One day, while serving as an adult counselor at that church's summer camp, here's what Jim wrote to me. "Your encouragement and kindness are always with me. I am happy to serve and learn and grow my faith. Every year, every day with my faith, you are in my mind as the rock in the foundation. Please know that you are my hero, and I will be forever in your debt." I had no idea. I had no idea that I had any impact on him. But he's thankful for me. And people are thankful for you. They're thankful for you because you ran after them when they accidentally left their cell phone on the store counter. They're thankful for you because you shoveled their sidewalk when you thought no one was watching. They're thankful for you because you called them after you had missed them for a couple weeks at church. Someone's thankful for you because you spoke to them when they were a newcomer in your class, or at your office, or in your neighborhood, or at church, and you eased their anxiety. People are thankful for you because you inspired them by your coaching, or your teaching, or your mentoring. Someone's thankful for you because you stopped their child from doing something dangerous when they weren't there to intervene. People thank God for you because of the impact you had on them, maybe even for reasons that you might consider insignificant. But kindness, compassion, encouragement, support, those are never insignificant. When Mrs. Klein told her first graders to draw a picture of something for which they were thankful, she wondered what these little children who lived in a deteriorating neighborhood, what they might actually have to be thankful for. She knew that most of the class would probably draw pictures of turkeys or bountifully laden Thanksgiving tables because that's probably what they believed was expected of them. What took Mrs. Klein aback was Douglas's picture. Douglas, well, he was so forlorn. He was likely to be found close in her shadow as they went out to recess. Douglas was timid, quiet, reserved. His drawing was simply a hand, not a turkey hand, just a hand. But whose hand? His class was captivated by that image, by that question. One student said, "I think it must be the hand of God who brings us food." Another said, "No, a farmer, because they grow the turkeys." "I think it looks like a policeman and they protect us." Lavinia said, "I think that it's supposed to be all the hands that help us." But Douglas could only draw just one of them. Well, Miss Klein was so delighted at finding her class so engaged, so responsive, she forgot to ask Douglas. And so once she had the class busy on another project, she bent over his desk and she asked him whose hand it was. And he mumbled, "It's yours, teacher." And then Mrs. Klein remembered that she often would hold him by the hand as they went out to recess. She often did that with all the children. But that it should have meant so much to Douglas. Perhaps, she reflected, perhaps this was her Thanksgiving and everybody's Thanksgiving, not the material things given to us, but the small ways that we give something to others. And in his own way, by that simple drawing, little Douglas was thanking God for Mrs. Klein. St. Paul wrote, "I thank my God for you every time I think of you." People are thanking God for you. And now, who are you thanking God for?